Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, like it.
Our dumpster fire of the week.
Ooh, can I go?
Yeah, go for
Kansas
it.
Kansas State.
Okay.
Good God.
Yeah.
Like, I know UCLA and Virginia Tech, you mentioned it earlier in the show. We've already hit on those.
They
two.
Were such dumpster fires that they fired their coach.
I mean, New Mexico bullied UCLA. Like, bullied them. Like, we're going to run the ball. We should have won by more. They won by 25. It should have been worse.
They left points out there.
Kansas State, what is going on there? I'm a Kleiman guy. Like, Avery Johnson, has anyone's star fallen further than Avery Johnson's? This was a preseason, like, sexy Heisman pick 2 years ago, and they, remind me, I think they lost a game late in the season a year ago to miss out on the Big 12 championship game, if I'm remembering.
So, did they lose to Colorado?
They lost the game up at Provo, which was like crazy weird.
Yeah, but then who did they lose to late?
I'm looking at it right now. They lost to Arizona State and Houston.
That's it. Yeah, that was the bad one.
Yeah, they lost to Houston. But I kind of gave them a little bit of a pass for Iowa State. North Dakota, I'm like, okay, it's a weird spot. You shouldn't be losing to North Dakota, but you won the game, okay. You squandered the lead to Army. All right, it's Army. It's weird. Did you triple option, all that. Friday night was inexcusable. And Brent Brennan, the head coach of Arizona, tried to
let
them
win. Oh, my God,
win.
That was such a war of who wanted to lose more.
He's like, you know what we should do? Let's kick another field goal. Come on, bring it out. They outgained them like 450 to 170. Like, they pummeled them. And somehow Kansas State, and I think Kansas State had like a 75-yard touchdown in that game.
Yeah, because they came right back to start the half, and you looked up and it's like, okay, they're going to be fine. And then, nope, no, they were not.
I was really wondering whether or not that was like a buy-low spot on Kansas State. I did bet a little bit on Kansas State, and I watched that whole game. I'm like, this team ain't it.
All right, let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll get into the list. Tom Brady making news out in Vegas last night. We got some more tush-push discourse. We'll get into all that, maybe some college football red zone when we come back, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, we do a little thing called the list. Let's fire it up. Tom Brady. All right, Tim, over at Allegiant Stadium last night on Monday Night Football, that feels like it has to be one of the least watched Monday Night Football games probably of the season. It was the back half of the doubleheader, and the game was a slog, to say the least, because the Raiders couldn't protect Geno, and then when they could protect Geno, Geno couldn't throw it to his guys. It was just kind of a really painful watch of a game. But during the middle of the game, Pete Schrager was doing one of the sidelines while Katie George was doing another. Pete came in with a report that Chip Kelly will speak with Tom Brady 2 to 3 times a week about game plan, about how they would handle blitzes and whatnot. Open dialogue. Then cameras catch Tom Brady, who was still in what appeared to be the suit that I guess he wore during the announcement of we are bringing flag football to Saudi Arabia. I guess we're evangelizing the Middle East with flag football.
Yay.
They catch him in the coach's booth. He has the headset on, and he appears to have the tablet. Now, the NFL has released a statement about what we actually saw. Quote, there are no policies that prohibit an owner from sitting in the coach's booth or wearing a headset during the game. Brady was sitting in the booth in his capacity as a limited partner. All personnel sitting in the booth must abide by policies that prohibit the use of electronic devices other than the league-issued equipment, such as Microsoft Surface tablets, for sideline viewing system. So, I think this is kind of the other thing that has that's kind of driven me insane. I don't think any of us care that he is taking involvement in the team that he has an ownership stake in. As I mentioned this morning, if you've been watching Colts games, Jim Irsay's daughter, who's now going to be the essentially the owner of the Colts, she has the headset on. She's got a clipboard. She's very involved. Nobody cares about that. That's not the issue because she's not calling the game of the week on Fox later on Sunday. And he could do this because on Sunday he was in Kansas City for Philly and KC, went to Vegas on Monday night to watch the team. I think the problem that I have with this is I am really struggling to see, like, if Barkley were doing this, I would say, whatever. Whatever you have to do, like, keeping Barkley on television is worth it for us. The problem is, Tom Brady's just not that good of an analyst. So my question is, like, why are we bending over backwards to cater to him when it felt like we spent his entire career trying to, like, catch him on every single possible rules violation and label him a cheater, but now it's all of a sudden he's like the NFL's golden goose. That's where I struggle with it.
To me, when I look at this situation, I just, if you want, and you kind of hit on this already, if you want to be involved every day and talk to Chip Kelly and do what's best for the organization that you have a minority stake in, go for it, man. That's great. But then you are not allowed, and like last year it was a big deal. Well, he's not allowed in the facilities and all that, and now he is. So explain to me how he can go meet with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and whoever else, all the coordinators, and he's supposed to be like, I won't relay all that inside information to the team that I own, or not own, I'm a minority owner of, when they play each other. I guess I don't understand that.
And so, like, I do think, because Jonathan Jones over at CBS has asked around, and he said the, you know, I'm paraphrasing his story a little bit, but he said the general consensus was the teams that play the Raiders on their schedule seem to care a lot more. And one of the comments that seemed to be reflective was, listen, I'm not really all that worried about my coach saying something to Tom slipping up. He's like, our opponents watch film, like that's kind of overblown. I think though the reality of it is it's like I don't understand why we're doing all this, because it would be one thing to me if I thought Tom Brady was bringing in this new audience, but it's been obvious the only person that's brought a new audience to the NFL in the last 5 years is Taylor Swift. I don't understand. He's not a good enough analyst to where we're sitting there and just rewriting the books. It's like, it seems pretty simple to me. It's like, it's an either or. Either you want to be the owner or you want to be the analyst. You can't do both. Like, I don't understand why this seems to be so complicated for the league.
I agree. And to your point, it's like, why do we need him on television if he's going to be doing this?
I mean, I guess Fox's argument would be, yes, we pay him $37 million a year. And, like, let's be clear why he wants to do both.
Of course.
I said $37 million a year. Like, you know, everyone's like, oh, he's got plenty of money. It's like, I don't know, man. When you meet people that are super rich, like, that's an expensive lifestyle. They like flying private, and that gets really expensive. They like being super rich, so they got to keep making money. That's one of the ways to do it. Where I just struggle with it is like, Fox will tell you, hey, he closes ads for us, and you don't understand how many deals. And I would sit there and go to Fox, you're selling the NFL. Are you telling me Bud Light's not going to advertise with you unless you have Tom Brady? This makes no sense to me. And I still think it's this. I think there are too many television executives that are so used to doing things the way that it is, which is like, we have to get a name brand as our lead analyst, and that's going to what we're going to roll out at upfronts, and that's going to sell everything. What do you think nationwide Brady's approval rating is?
Not through the roof.
And again, I think most people are like, I think he was a great football player. Like, I think most people like, I think most people would probably say like, I think he was an all-time great, but like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not turning on the game to watch Tom Brady. Like, I don't think it's like it used to be where it's like, all right, who do Madden and Summerall have this week? Like, I don't think that's what it is anymore. And what makes no sense to me is it feels like TV executives with their play-by-play guys, they want to get more generic and they want to get these guys that are just interchangeable with no personality. It's like, fill in A and B. And I'm not insulting anyone in the business. I understand how difficult the job is, but there is not a lot of distinguishing factors when you watch the NFL on Sunday from your play-by-play guys. I do not understand why we have to have all of this Tom Brady, because, again, if he were great at it, I would get it. But he's not. He's objectively not. And the other aspect that it got me thinking about, I put this on Twitter earlier today. I know we've done this move with coaches, like, usually all-time great players don't wind up being all-time great coaches. You and I talked about Larry Bird kind of gets forgotten about. Like, Larry Bird did a really good job. Jerry West was a great executive, but he hated coaching. Who is the best player that was also like an all-time great in-game analyst? I'm not talking about Barkley, who's sitting at a desk and just kind of shooting it, if you will. I think you have to say right now the answer is Aikman, right?
I was going to say Aikman, Hall of Fame quarterback, multiple time winning Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Because the other ones that were thrown out, we had a listener.
You said player, right?
Correct. Because Madden, that's the other thing with Madden. It's like Madden won a Super Bowl, but like he retired pretty early in his career. Like, it's not like Madden like had all of these records, but he had a good
and
record.
And Gruden was I think a pretty good analyst.
I think Gruden was very good.
But he was a coach.
Tell you what, man. That guy right there, I call him the sheriff. So, but like the other ones that were thrown out, like, so one of the listeners mentioned Bob Greasy, and I think Greasy qualifies, but I also think there's a distinction. Wasn't most of Bob's career calling college games? Like, I think Bob Greasy is known way more for being the quarterback of the Dolphins than he was the quarterback at Purdue, but his color analyst work was college games. But like most of the greats are not, like, you know, we didn't put Montana in the booth.
I don't think he wanted to be in the booth. Like, a lot of these guys don't want to do it, right? They don't want to grind all the way through.
I think that's where it starts to get interesting. I think now some of them are looking at the check and going, well, maybe I do want to do that. When Montana was probably going to do it, it probably didn't pay that much money. I guess OJ, we probably have to, like, listen, say what you want about him. Say what you want about him as a man. He was a great player. Pretty good analyst on Monday Night Football. I told you, one of the most conflicted I've ever been was when OJ was on Twitter and you go, the guy's making incredibly good sense. Like, when he was talking about, like, who was it? There was a running back. He's like, he was basically told him, like, stop in your holdout. Like, they're not going to pay you. Like, I think it was Saquon. I was like, Saquon, what are you doing? Like, they're just not going to pay you. Like, go and play this year, and then you'll get your deal next year somewhere else. It's like, he's making insanely good sense. But, like,
I think the answer is Aikman.
And that's the thing. It's like, I think history and time has been kinder to Aikman and Buck, because I felt like 10 or 15 years ago, they would have been considered like the most hated. But now I think everybody collectively is like, now these guys are pretty good at it. Because there's also a difference between knowing the game and being a good in-game analyst. What did Collinsworth had one the other night? Oh my God. I did know. I knew Sunday Night Football was in trouble. Did you catch on Sunday Night Football when they were showing us the highlight package of Michael Penix, who was 11 of 19 for 104, and the highlight package was, look how fast he's getting the ball out of his hands. It's like, okay, that shows you where we are. But I don't know. Like that's my whole thing with Brady. It's like, I just don't understand why we're doing all this. I find it hard to believe that anybody is turning on, like, I need to know. I think maybe last year it was true because I think there was curiosity. I do not think now anyone sits there and goes, you know what? If the Brady broadcast is on, move over Red Zone. I'm sitting down. I'm making sure that I'm making time for Kevin and Tom today.
I don't know if there's any team right now like that. Maybe Buck and Aikman.
I think that's a good
question.
By the
way, my man Fowler, you gotta take a break, bro. Like last night it was struggling. The voice was struggling out there in Las Vegas.
I feel like though, doesn't this happen every year? Didn't last year? It always happens when he's doing all the travel where he's going back and forth from the US Open tennis. He's doing college games, and then he always inevitably has a Monday night game. I feel like there was one week last year, maybe it was the Cal game that he was supposed to call, and then Reese had to pinch hit.
Yes. Yeah, there was a game. Yes.
I think this happens to him every year.
Wasn't there a game where he started and he had to stop? I can't remember. Or maybe
that vaguely rings a bell.
There was a game late night. It was either Fowler or Reese that was just, they were struggling.
There was definitely a Reese game as well where, and like you can understand it for Reese because like Reese is
3 hours of television.
And the game day and all the travel there. And I think that might have also been at a time when Reese was still calling Thursday night games. Because, you know, there's the period where Fowler's hosting game day and calling the game like Kirk did. And then Fowler hands off game day to Reese, but then Reese was still calling like Thursday night games, and then he gave that up. And now
Do you remember when we had Thursday night games that were called by Corso, Herb Street, and
Tarico?
Was it Tarico?
It was Tarico. It was Tarico. It was Tarico, Herb Street, and Corso.
Man.
That was the Thursday night football crew.
That's a pretty good crew.
And
you know who I am just, I have always been a fan of. And he did the Georgia Tech game, Georgia Tech Clemson, and then he was out doing money. I love Lewis Riddick. I think he's tremendous.
I agree. I also like Lewis when Lewis does roster stuff. I think he's very good. Like, but he's like another example of he was not the greatest player. He was not maybe even the greatest league executive. But you know what? He's great on television.
Well, and ESPN, I think, has finally figured it out. You know who their best basketball analyst is?
Legler.
The 1997 three-point shooting champion, well, Tim Legler.
The reason why I brought all this up, because I think this is also interesting. And again, I have no idea if this is going to occur, but if you paid attention to Steph during the offseason, and Steph has been very vocal about, he thinks the next CBA, what needs to be addressed is players having team equity. Are they going to run into it where, because we know LeBron wants to be an owner.
Yep.
And it seems to me also, and you can tell me if you think I'm off base here, I feel like a lot of the NBA crews are kind of in limbo, like where they don't want to get locked into some crew long term because it feels like they all want to go after either LeBron, Steph, KD. Like they want to go after these guys and make them their lead guys. So it feels like we kind of have a lot of these like holdover crews. It feels to me like when we had, who was the Monday night crew? Was it Steve Levy, Brian Griese, and I think there was a third in the booth. It was like Levy, Greasy, and someone else where all those guys are competent guys. And I'm not saying, but it's like you could tell that ESPN.
They were waiting to try to get
right.
Joe Buck. And
correct. And they knew that Fox's contracts weren't going to expire. And then I think for a while they had Joe Tess.
Yeah. Tess Joe did a Tess year. And Jason Witten. That was a nightmare.
Yeah, and that didn't. And then was that with the Booger Mobile?
Yes.
Also, history's been kind to my boy Booger. I'm telling you.
By the way, it was, I think it was Levy, Greasy, and Riddick.
Yeah. And again, like.
They were fine. I mean, once again, I like Riddick a lot. And I thought the Witten Tessitore was like, oh, this is going to change things up. And then you had the Booger Mobile. I was like, this is not really that good.
Yeah, and I will defend Booger to the grave on that one. Everyone's making fun. It's like, he was put in the worst possible spot. And it's like, now you get Booger on TV. Booger's good TV. But the other thing was, Witten was a league-appointed color guy. Like, that was the league. The league's like, put, because remember, that was when ESPN couldn't get, like, the Monday night games were just horrible. And they're sitting there going like, hey, guys, we paid you, like, $2.5 billion. Can we get some better games? And the league was like, what are you talking about? Bengals and Jaguars is a great game. Like, enjoy. Like, and then all of a sudden they get Buck and Aikman, and now they're accommodating to him. But I don't know. Like, this is the weird thing to me with Brady. It's like, I've never seen someone that the league felt like, I felt like the league was constantly trying to, like, go after him. And now it's like he's, like, untouchable. I mean, literally, he was trying to sell yesterday flag football in Saudi Arabia to us. Which brings me to my next question. What the hell is Fanatics? Because all my life, Fanatics has been where you get, let's be real, cheap team-issued gear. T-shirts, jerseys, hats, whatnot. Now I'm seeing... I'm now seeing they have a sports book. They have whatever Fanatics Fest is that looked like it cost like $2 billion. And then now they're selling to us, like, they're literally sports washing for Saudi Arabia, giving us flag football in Saudi Arabia, a question that nobody asked for.
I have no idea. I mean, Fanatics, yeah, is kind of...
When did it pivot? So... Someone needs to explain this to me. When did it go from I'm watching ESPNU at 11:30 and it's like, get your team issued gear, where somebody's standing in front of a green screen, and I always had to wonder, how did they superimpose and Photoshop all those different team jerseys on? How did they go to from that to, like, now that they're like the presenting sponsor of flag football with celebrities in Saudi Arabia with a sports book? George, do you have any insight into this?
Not anything crazy, but I was double-checking something because I had a feeling about something with Fanatics. So their CEO is Michael Rubin.
Correct.
Who also at one point used to be a part owner of the Sixers and the Devils.
He's part of the owner.
Not anymore.
Well, he was part of Harris's, and I think he had to get rid of it.
He had to sell.
Conflict of interest, right?
Conflict of interest, and
yes.
He ended up selling that to Edelman. So
wait, so Edelman
David.
Is that the Edelmans that own the Mavs?
No. I thought it was the Sands that owned.
So the Edelmans.
That's right.
The Edelmans, yes. Owned the Sands.
Yes. No, not the same group.
I need someone to do a, you can put it on YouTube or whatnot. I need someone that does like a 45-minute, like, YouTube. How did Fanatics go from being able to get a $12 New York Giants t-shirt to whatever they are now?
I think you still can buy those t-shirts, though.
And again, I'm not...
They're just $30 now instead of...
I'm not knocking... I actually thought, I was like, that serves a purpose. Because I don't know about you, man. I'm not super Jones that every time, like, I go to a Cardinal game, it's like, I kind of want to spruce up the shirt. Big win for me at the San Diego game. I didn't know if I told you this. My Matt Carpenter jersey from 2011 still fit. That was a big win. But, like, I'm not super excited to go to the team store and hawk over $45 for a piece of cotton. So I understand, like, I'm not crapping on Fanatics as a company. I don't understand how they became this other thing. And I think what annoys me is my spidey sense is off. It doesn't smell legal.
No.
None of it does. Anything else you would like to add to the Tom Brady saga?
I think we've exercised it pretty well.
All right. College Red Zone. All right, so, Tim, you and I had discussed back when this was initially thought, when ESPN bought the rights to the name Red Zone, which, by the way, still hasn't been approved yet, that Scott Hansen, I think, was on the record as saying, hey, College Red Zone's a thing, and you were like, well, what are they going to do about the rights? What are they going to do about the rights to games that they don't have? Today, so I guess Front Office Sports was hosting what appeared to be like a very online, like, sports media forum, whatnot. And so Jimmy Pitaro was one of the guests, and he said, college football is something we've started to look into, as well as other sports, on expanding the Red Zone brand. Michael McCarthy, very different than Mike McCarthy, of Front Office Sports, also said, ESPN's Jimmy Pitaro told me he's ready to sit down with Eric Shanks of Fox and the Big Ten to explore a more complete college football version of the Red Zone, instead of a Red Zone with just conferences where ESPN has the rights. I ask you this, is this something that could change your Saturday viewing?
Would they, if they have the rights to all of the games?
Correct.
Yes.
So
I would have it on a screen. I still like to watch the games as much as complete as possible, but I would definitely have it on a screen. I currently spend most Saturdays with the quad box.
Yep.
Watching those games, but if we have a red zone with all of the games, yeah, it would change how I consume it.
I also wonder, I do think the host matters. Now, Hansen seemed to be volunteering.
I don't want Hansen.
I don't want Hansen, but I don't know who I do want.
I'll do it.
Well, first off, I'm more qualified, please. this is a man. I've been changing channels. Like, listen, this is one thing that I was put on this planet to do. It's like why I used to always get frustrated with Siciliano on the Red Zone. It's like, I know for a fact I can do this better than you can. Like, it was just obvious. But
I think Barry would be capable of doing it. I think Matt Barry does.
I think Matt's
good
very good. You know who I actually, you know who I want, but they won't do it? If they could get SVP and Stanford Steve to do it on a Saturday where you just literally sit and watch football with them, like, I do think that could be a game changer.
Yeah, I don't think they would ever do it. I mean, I guess money always talks.
Well, I think that's the real question is, how much money do you think would be in it for ESPN? Because I think that's the other thing. If you're someone that has...
Well, you're going to have to pay Fox and CBS, right?
In order well, to get- so that's kind of what's been interesting. If you've been watching what they've been doing, they've not been... It's unclear to me. Like, with TNT, I don't know if they're exchanging money with TNT.
I don't think they are with
I think
TNT.
They gave them inventory. And so what they've been doing is giving up inventory. And so if you're Fox, are you thinking, okay, maybe we do this and we'll take a couple of playoff games, like a couple of the college football playoff games? Because I was surprised to see when they did reopen it for bidding, Fox was all not all that interested.
For the playoff?
Yeah. Because I think most people thought that it was going to get split up. I think most people thought, all right, ESPN will have most of it, but Fox, like, I think most people thought, like, if there, because let's see, there's four first round games, four quarterfinals, two semis, so there's 11 games. I think most people thought it was going to be like 6-5 or 7-4, with ESPN keeping the title game. But like maybe the semifinals were going to be on Fox. I think people thought that. So I'm wondering if maybe that's what they barter.
So we are close to getting, if we go to 16, then we're 8-4-2-1. So then we're at 15.
I think that's correct. Although you weren't on Friday.
Uh-huh.
Blake and I have decided like 12 might be the perfect number.
I've always said it's the perfect number.
Like it rocks. And I think the problem that I'm going to have with 16 is It's not that I'm not going to watch it. It's just I know that they're not doing it because they think it's the best format. It's that they just want more money. I think this format rocks because, especially I think when we see when it's going to get seeded properly this year, like I think we're going to have a better chance for not as many blowouts in round one, and I think we could have even better quarterfinals. But with the proper seeding, you realize you had to earn your way there. I do not believe we left out a national someone that was capable of actually winning the national title. Again, I think Alabama and Ole Miss could have won a game in the playoffs. I do not think they were going to win all the games and win the national title. But there's a reward for actually making it, and there's still enough, like, it's still exclusive enough that it doesn't feel like, all right, you've made it in, congratulations. Like, it is a actual reward to make it.
I totally agree, and if we get to 16, I'll still watch. I'm not going to pretend like, oh, this, you know, I'm not going to be a college football fan, but I think it does hurt the regular season product a little bit more. And, yeah, we went through this exercise of the teams that made it a year ago if there were 16 teams. So I would love for it to stay at 12. I'm not naive. I think it ultimately will go to 16, but I think 12 is ideal.
No, I think it's a good number. Okay.
Did we need South Carolina in it last year?
No.
A team that lost to Illinois in their bowl game?
No, and got hammered by Ole Miss and lost three times. Like, yeah, I know. One of the games, Sellers got hurt. Okay. Well, yeah, no. Like, don't get run out
now,
of town.
No, as a Notre Dame fan, I might be more interested in a 16-team playoff this year.
I still think 10-2, you're fine.
I don't know if they're getting to 10-2. I really don't.
Wait, but then it becomes the question of, is that a playoff team?
Right. No, I don't think, here's the thing. We can have all of the discord about whether or not a 10-2 Notre Dame team gets in. I don't think they're a playoff team. And this is what one of the beat reporters told me. He's like, okay, the holding gets called, which was egregious. Egregious.
I was more mad. Who was the kid that dropped the pick?
I think that was Leonard Moore.
I wanted him charged with crimes. I think he was trying to fix the game.
But I just don't think they're a playoff team.
I will say this, though. I think a lot of fan bases are thinking this.
Sure. No doubt.
I think that's a big part of it. All right, let's take a look at the lines of the week and get into a couple more thoughts from college football. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Tim, we got another. I mean, honestly, it's been so far three pretty good weeks of college football. Like, even in week two, when we thought, hey, the schedule didn't look that good, you and I, by the end of the week, we'd talked ourselves into it being pretty good, and it definitely delivered. And while maybe a lot of people are looking forward to next weekend, I think there's still plenty interesting this weekend. So, what has caught your eye? We know that ever since this summer, you have had the Memphis-Arkansas game circled. And I'll ask you it this way. Do you feel any differently this week than you did when you identified the spot? Are you trusting your eyes? Are you trusting your gut?
We don't have to roll with it, but I feel like Arkansas's offense has been impressive. And you know more about Memphis than I do. You were all over that spot last week against Troy. The market was on Troy, and Memphis really took advantage and took care of business there. I think Arkansas, look, you could say that Notre Dame's not as good as they have been, and that's true. It's still a massive game for them at home, and
the gold helmets are coming to Fayetteville.
Yeah, and they've been I mean, once again, I go back to the summer. Colin Wilson, who lives in that area, works for Action Network, he said the game that they're talking about the most is Notre Dame. Bigger than any game on that schedule. They'd been talking about it all summer. So you're laying north of a touchdown on the road at Memphis. I think that game is pretty interesting. It's still going to be interesting to me. I think the noon window, the noon Eastern 11 a.m. Central window, is wildly entertaining. Has the potential to be wildly entertaining because you've got the Iron Skillet game, SMU TCU, which I think had like 110-120 points or something like that last year. And then you got Texas Tech Utah. I kind of hate that this is a day game at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. I wish it was a night game at Rice-Eccles, but I think that game is very interesting. And then look, Jackson Arnold's return? Come on now. Like, that's massive.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I've also...
I mean, Indiana, Illinois, well, I Florida, go, Miami.
I want to go to that Texas slate, man. I want to go to that Texas Tech-Utah game. Have they kicked off at 10 a.m. before? I feel like I remember...
I feel like there was some... I feel like during the COVID season, there was a lot of complaining from the Pac-12.
Yeah, because we had some 9 a.m. I remember there was like a USC game that kicked off at 9 a.m. It was like breakfast with the Trojans.
Yeah. So I want to say Utah has had a 10 a.m. game before. I don't love it for Utah. I wish it was night. There's something about Rice-Eccles at night that is a daunting environment. I don't love that it's at 10 a.m. Now, the good people of Salt Lake will probably still be fired up to do it on pure adrenaline. But... yeah, I would have loved this game to be at night, but you know, it's one of those things, like kind of what we talked about at the start of the year. Do we know anything about Texas Tech yet? They've played Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Kent State, and Oregon State, who looks like an absolute corpse, who is 35.5 point underdogs this week to Oregon.
So did the Cougs.
Yeah, I know. Yeesh.
So to your point,
Pac-2 teams don't look too impressive.
Do we know anything? No, I will say. Typically what you see of the team that is like on the rise is it's like when they play the bad teams, they do beat the crap out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a drastically different test.
Look, I was wrong on Clemson preseason. I've been right on Utah. Now it's early and they could lose this game. And I'll say this, the look ahead market actually shifted towards Texas Tech. Last week it was 4. And now it's 3 or 3.5 right now on Utah. Utah is the favorite at home against Texas Tech, but maybe the sleepy spot on the road at Wyoming wasn't looked at all that great in the eyes of bettors. But right now you're looking at 3s across the market in favor of Utah. So we've moved from 4 down to 3.
All right, so the other thing that I wanted to mention to you on the on the stock up, I would have had traveling because if you looked back to last week, Oregon failed to cover against Northwestern. Minnesota lost outright to Cal. Now that even though Tim and I got home on that one, the fumble punt is like, I think Cal was the right side the whole game. I think that was obvious, but the fumbled punt is what locked it up for us. Boston College loses to Stanford.
Oof.
USC failed to cover against Purdue. Also important to note, rainstorm delay, all that. So this week I had in the spots to watch, Michigan State heads to USC at a game at 11 p.m. Eastern that Sparty fans have already been complaining about for 2 weeks.
Stanford. Weird spot, by the way, for USC because next week they play Illinois.
Correct.
Pointed out there.
Stanford also heads to UVA. And if you don't think I'm trying to get my money back next week, then UNLV is going to Miami of Ohio.
That might be the weirdest game of the week. UNLV going to Oxford, Ohio, and I'll point that we actually just Shameless plug. We just recorded a new episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and people always wonder, you know, pros versus Joes. What does sharp money mean, etc.? What moves the line? I can tell you one thing. The average bettor who throws down $22 to win 20 wasn't out there betting UNLV Miami of Ohio yesterday. And the boys from Oxford, who have looked pretty putrid, took some money yesterday. Just put that in the old think cap there and just put it out there. UNLV 3-0. Miami, I believe, 0-2. And money came in on the boys from Oxford. Now, sharp money's not always right, but I just wanted to throw that out there to people.
Also, BYU going to East Carolina. How gross do you want to get?
I bet East Carolina already.
What did you get?
7.5.
Okay, it's down to 6.5. I tip my cap to you. Does anyone want to try?
East Carolina might win that game outright. Bear Bachmeyer.
You and I talked about it. If you watched the Stanford game, all you left thinking was BYU, if that's going to be their quarterback situation, they've got problems.
And he's had games at home against Stanford and Portland State. And now you've got to go from Provo to Greenville, North Carolina. And I don't know if anyone in Memphis knows about.
Oh, that trip is
East Carolina.
It is out in the middle of nowhere.
And that place is going to be popping. 7:30 nighttime. Oh, buddy. That's going to be an underrated atmosphere on Saturday night. That's going to be a good one.
Did you mention Arizona State and Baylor?
Very good game.
We also have, what are you in the Big Ten? Michigan goes to Nebraska.
I sneaky love that game. I wish it was a night game. I have a win total over on Nebraska, so we're off to a good start. I think they're 3-0. This was one of the swing games. I would like to see the corn here in this spot play well. Number gone up from 1.5 to 2.5, getting maybe close to 3, so we'll keep our eyes on that one. And then how about, you want a sleepy spot?
Well, I was going to say, I don't know what's going to happen in Oxford. That reeks of a trap.
Oxford, Ohio?
No,
or Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, no, I can already tell you what I'm doing in Oxford, Ohio.
I'm hoping we get a 3-back.
We're spreading the wings, baby.
Yeah, we're gonna wait there on that one. But I want to point out a game. You know, you and I implored the good people of Stark Vegas 2 weeks ago to ring those bells as loud as possible. And from all reporting, they did just that. You could put the bells on ice this week.
You want some points?
Let's be quiet. Let's let the boys from DeKalb come in and muck this thing up. And the Bulldogs get out of there with like a 17-point win. How about that?
Carolina and Missouri, the line being at 11.5 suggests to me that
Sellers ain't playing.
Bookmakers do not believe that Sellers will be playing that game.
The number last week was 3.
Let's see. I only have to lay 15.5 with UVA. Okay, that's good. I was hoping it just was under 20. Let's see. Would you like to take? I think we got to do it. We got to take 40 with Sam Houston State, right? I know they're god awful, but like San Jose State wasn't good. UTEP isn't good.
I don't know. My only worry is this the week that Arch that they try to like pile it on? Oh
no, they tried that every week.
Now, how about how about the boys from Georgia State catching 27.5?
That's a revenge
Diego
game.
It is a revenge game, but Diego doesn't like being a favorite.
Well, the other thing is also Vandy has a very efficient and effective offense, but they're not trying to like – they have more explosiveness this year, but they're not just like trying to bomb it on you. And they, oftentimes you're going to get that kind of game. Like they
– now
– you got to have a quick strike.
Next week actually is the spot for us to fade Diego because you've got Utah State coming in, early game – next week after that is at Bama. I think next week might be the spot to jump in on.
I actually think I'm going to start this. I think they have to start doing some load management.
I'll probably take Georgia State. I mean, I don't think there's a rush right now. I mean, it's 27.
No, I'm hoping I can get some 28. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. I don't know how much eyes you got on the first Monday night game, because obviously for you, that would have kicked off at like 4?
Watched the whole thing. I was in studio.
Okay. So I don't know if you had the sound on, but did you see the play where Kalijah Cansey clearly rips his pec? and like stops his pass rush?
I did not.
Well, the Bucs announced that he was questionable to return to the game. And it turns out, no, when you do maybe stop your entire pass rush and you rip your pec, it is indeed, yes, he ripped his pec entirely. And he could have been just declared out then, but instead he's now out for the season. But he was still questionable to return last night.
Did we ever find out what happened to Khalil Mack? Because he definitely
elbow,
broke.
I think is what they
he
said.
Broke something. He was like, ah, I'm out of here.
Well, yeah. All right, my man.
All right.
Have a good rest of the week.
See you, dude.
That is Tim Murray of VSiN. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.